This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And in studio is the seasoned political consultant, public relations professional, Ronna Gray. And she is a Democrat by party affiliation, and she went to Iowa and saw the calamity there before it happened, as Democrats were scurrying for votes in the caucuses and ended up with a muddled picture leaving Iowa, and one that took a while to even come up with a projected winner. Now, tonight, the stage is Las Vegas in advance of the Nevada primary this weekend, Saturday. Six candidates have qualified for the Democratic debate tonight: Joe Biden, Mike Bloomberg, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren. There were two routes to qualification. Hit 10% in four national polls or 12% in two Nevada or South Carolina polls, with a pledged national convention delegate in either Iowa or New Hampshire. Biden, Sanders, and Warren hit all the benchmarks. Bloomberg qualified because of his polling, and Buttigieg and Klobuchar got in with delegates. Tom Steyer, who made the stage at the previous five debates, fell short on both avenues. So a big night in Las Vegas, which also was the stage 4 years ago when the Republicans gathered and were winnowing their field. And I still recall Jeb Bush, when Donald Trump called him Low Energy Jeb, saying, "Donald, you're not going to insult your way to the presidency." Well, look what happened. Well, tonight there's going to be fireworks, and Ronna Gray leaves for Nevada tomorrow, so there'll be the aftermath of the debate. And I have a feeling that tonight could be a rough night for Mike Bloomberg. I think they're all going to be coming at him. What do you think about what we're about to see and hear tonight?
Well, it's getting down to the wire for some of them, and I do think his lot of spending and advertising gave him a boost in the polls, got him in the debate. I think they've all got to go after him. I think Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have already started that ahead of the debate. So I think there'll be even more of it. I think you're right, Jim.
Well, you were in Iowa, and I'm told your first trip, right?
It was. I was in Iowa 3 weeks before the failed caucus, and I think it's something I've always wanted to do. It is democracy in action, and I've watched over the years the Manship School students go up there and cover the Iowa caucus. It just looked like a lot of fun. Started talking to other people. I found several people who had been up there to see the town hall meetings. It's very different to see it in that setting where you might be in a room with 40 people. Some people told me when Obama won in 2008, they went to meetings. There were less than 10 people at some of them, and they just sat around and talked with him and Michelle Obama and other candidates, and it seems like the people there really enjoy it.
One of the best places to own a radio or television station as far as revenue is Iowa, because those candidates come every 4 years and they spend like drunken sailors trying to get their party's nod. And the Democrats managed to really mess this up. Iowa may not be first, and maybe for good reason. It's not reflective of the rest of the country. But I'm sure the folks in Iowa are worried like you wouldn't believe, because this is a big part of their economy.
I think they've got to be worried. They put it in their constitution that if anyone has an earlier caucus or primary, their date has to automatically move up so that they are always first. But I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on them now that they had this. And it's just a shame, and it shows you what we're dealing with in elections and software, things that can go wrong. There were a lot of rumors flying about phone lines being hacked by maybe the opposing party or just someone wanting to wreak havoc, and you don't know what the truth is. And of course Nevada was planning to use the same app for reporting, but they scrapped that immediately, and it'll be interesting to see if they're able to pull it off, because they were going to have a similar process.
Your number is 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org for emails. Ronna Gray in-house. And we start with Tom in Woodland Ridge. Hi, Tom. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Good morning, Ronna. Good morning, Jim. A quick question about the debate. Do we really think that Bloomberg will be the target, or does the first target have to be Sanders to resolve the progressive versus moderate issue? Seems like you got to get that resolved first. and then move on to choosing the candidate once you've figured out whether it's going to be a progressive or a moderate.
That's a good point. I suspect Bernie will be a target as well, but this is Bloomberg's first debate.
Right.
And Sanders has come at him hard for good reason. According to the Las Vegas odds now, Sanders is a 40% chance of 44% chance of being the Democratic nominee, and Bloomberg is at like 33%. And he's got gobs of money that he can spend and spend and spend. And if he gets momentum, he'll have encouragement to spend, and they're trying to tamp that down. They want the momentum to stop. And, Rana, he has some areas where it would seem that Democrats could attack him on effectively.
You're talking about Bloomberg?
Yes.
Absolutely. And they, as I said, they've already been doing it. And, Tom, that's a very good question. I think what you're seeing is two parallel fights. You're right. There's a fight among moderates and progressives for who's going to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. And then there's the fight for this new person with endless money to spend coming in and suddenly having the ability to compete without having gone through the previous caucuses. But he's got the stop and frisk, which everyone is on him about. He's got the billionaire status, which fits well for Bernie, although he did take the giving pledge, and he's giving away 90% of his wealth, as Bill Gates and some of the other, as they call them, good billionaires have pledged to do. But he does. He has a lot of when you're mayor of city of New York, you're going to have a lot of things that people can run at you against.
And he was a Republican not so long ago, and Donald Trump was a Democrat, and we have a clear case of role reversal from the two men from Gotham City. I would say two billionaires, but
one's questionable.
Bloomberg says, who's the other one?
That's right.
And he's not just a billionaire. He's a super billionaire. He's one of the richest people on the planet.
Yes.
Over $50 billion estimated for Michael Bloomberg, three-term mayor of New York. He got the Constitution changed in New York to allow him to be the mayor for a third term. And you make a lot of enemies when you're mayor. You handled a three-term mayor, and he managed to come away relatively unscathed as a popular mayor. And now he's very hard to characterize as a socialist. After all, he is the richest man to ever run for president of the United States.
And I always say mayors make decisions that are very personal to people. They really hit you on your—they're about your home, they're about your schools, how you get around your city. They're very—who picks up your trash, whether or not they do a good job. They're very, very personal issues to people. People have very strong feelings about them. So running as a mayor, as a former mayor of a city, like you said, is not – you're going to have a record. You're going to have a record people can pick apart. I've noticed also in California you're seeing a lot of people – back to Tom's question about the progressive wing of the party. I think Bernie's a lock on California at this point, and there are a lot of people just very, very worried that he gets the momentum and the Democrats put up the one candidate that I think the president might be cheering for her.
Well, and a listener, this is Diana, noting that Trump, as we know, a dozen years ago was a Democrat who said that George Bush should have been impeached and Bill Clinton should not have, and was supportive of Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi, many other Democrats. Now, of course, we know Donald Trump is a different man, a changed man. And on the Democratic side, Bloomberg was a Republican. And Sanders has never been a Democrat. He's still not a Democrat.
Right.
And the Democrats, unlike Republicans, allow somebody who's an independent to run for their nomination, even though they did pass a rule to stop that. Bernie's running as a socialist Democrat, and he, at this point, is the favorite to get the nomination.
I thought it was so funny 4 years ago when he complained so loudly about the Democratic Party favoring Hillary Clinton and the process favoring her. And I thought, you know, maybe you should join the party and change some of those things. And you're right. It's a really interesting thing that we're seeing with our parties.
And another listener notes, as stated yesterday, and this is a topic for Raymond Jetson, who will come later. The two major candidates for the Democratic nomination right now are both of the Jewish faith. And that would be a first in American history as well.
That's true. That's a big difference.
877-217-5757. We're going to go to the phone lines again with Rana Gray, so there's time to get in with her, longtime Democratic political consultant. She, of course, was the person largely responsible for Kip Holden being elected, and also Sid Gottrow back in the days when he was
a Democrat, right?
Talk about an epiphany, huh?
Yeah, two good guys.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim, and good morning, Rana.
Good morning.
My question is this. I mean, do you think because of more scandals that are going to come out, you know, more of the truth about how corrupt Trump is as we go along, that he will be easier to beat even though he didn't get impeached? He's still in office.
All right. Well, what more can come out?
I know. I was about to say, I do not think he will ever be easy to beat. I think people who are his supporters are okay with everything and more, as Jim says.
We'll spend some more time with Ronna Gray, who is packing as we speak to go to Las Vegas and see what's happening in Nevada. And we'll talk about it when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And coming later today, you'll hear Governor John Bel Edwards at 2 o'clock ask the governor. And one of the things that might come up is whether he would entertain the thought of being on a ticket with one of these guys. And as strange as it seems, he would be the perfect ticket balancer for Bernie Sanders. And there is a precedent for this. In 1976, Ronald Reagan ran for president and lost closely to Gerald Ford for the Republican nomination. And prior to the convention in Kansas City, Reagan, trying to change the inertia, named his running mate. And he named the then liberal senator from Pennsylvania, Richard Schweiker. People thought, why is this very conservative governor of California, former governor then, naming Richard Schweiker? He was trying to balance the ticket. Didn't work, but talk about a ticket balancer. That would happen if John Bel Edwards were with Bernie Sanders. Oh, they're both pro-gun, though. They're both pro-gun, which is at odds with the Democratic hierarchy. Steve Winham writes, the former budget director in St. Francisville, could some of the things for which Bloomberg is being criticized attract some Trump voters? That's from Steve Winham asking Ronna Gray.
I think that's a very good point, too. It's funny that even Bernie Sanders and Trump share some voters, but I think that's exactly right. Yeah, there's some people who feel that people who are as financially successful at the time 4 years ago of Trump and now Bloomberg, they've run businesses. They know how to manage large organizations. And some of the things he's criticized for, I think stop and frisk, you look at Rudy Giuliani did it, and Trump, there's just countless interviews of Trump bragging on how stop and frisk made New York safer. And you're right, there's some crossover vote there in play.
Crossover vote, and plus, if it comes down to Trump against any Democrat, no matter what the sins of the Democrat are, the base, they have really two choices. They're not going to vote for Trump, let's face it. That's either to vote for the candidate they may not like that much, who is the Democrat, or stay at home. And Mike Bloomberg might very well be able to withstand some of the positions he's taken that are at odds with Democrats.
I think you're right. And the Bernie factor, of course, 4 years ago, the Bernie followers really never went to Hillary Clinton in large numbers, and that was an issue there. And there's always that danger now. He looks like he's got momentum. If for some reason Bernie Sanders is not the nominee, will his supporters get behind someone else? That's a big question.
And who would the vice presidential candidate be for either of them? You know, it's unlikely that John Bel Edwards is going to be the guy, but I wouldn't rule it out. But it would seem that we're talking about two white males here. The Democratic Party brags about the big tent. It would seem that somebody like Amy Klobuchar, a woman or a minority, would be well-positioned to be on the ticket.
I think the Democrats desperately need a woman on the ticket. The women's vote, both Democrat and Republican, is so important in this election. Women voters in the Republican Party are the ones that Trump has lost in this term, and I know he's working very hard to get them back, but they're in play. And so the opportunity to have a woman on the ticket just has to be. A woman of color would be even more attractive, I think.
There aren't many of them. The New York Times, in a story on Sunday in its edition, noted that there have only been 10 African-American U.S. senators in the history of our country. In the history of our country. And two of those were appointed.
That's amazing. I liked Kamala Harris, or she's a woman of color, but she's got a mixed race background, but very sharp and very effective in the Senate. Ran a poor campaign, though, so I don't know if that helped her a lot. Stacey Abrams has put her name back in play that she's interested. There's a Southern African-American candidate that was able to motivate people and voters
a
lot.
Tracy at the Capitol asking, what about Michelle Obama? She would be an attractive candidate if she wanted to do it, I think.
I think she would be an unbelievably attractive candidate. I get the feeling, not that I've chatted with them, but I get the feeling they have served their time, and she especially has moved on and making impacts in other areas. But what an unbelievable candidate she would be. Tracy's right about that.
You've seen this in your line of work. The people who are the most electable often choose not to go the distance. Take a guy like Tommy Cazenova, three-time All-American, Hollywood handsome, doctor, Crowley, Louisiana, the hotbed of Louisiana political lore. He could have been governor. He could have been president of the United States, but he just said, this isn't for me.
I've seen a lot of people like that. Tommy Hudson comes to mind, who was such a good senator, and they just move on. A lot of quality people. Politics has gotten so ugly. I don't really do a lot of campaigns anymore. I've still got a great interest in it and want to stay involved and active, but it's gotten so ugly. It's so hard on people's families to put them through that. That's why I think the Obamas served their time and they're ready, like, to move on. Tommy had a great practice and can do other things than put up with that.
But, Rana, people wonder why people who run for president are so quirky. Well, it takes a special kind of person to get up in the morning and look in the mirror and have that mirror look back at them and say, you should be president of the United States. Not many people have that sense of ego or self-worth, whatever you want to call it, but some people do. As Chris Coons, the senator from Delaware, said that Buddy Romer, of course, ran for president, as did Bobby Jindal, and when Jindal would look in the mirror and it would tell him, you should run for president. He didn't realize it was Buddy Romer's mirror that was left over at the mansion. But a lot of people think that they're the chosen one.
Right. It takes a special person. You're right. And one of the things I thought was so interesting on going to Iowa and meeting these people, they seem very down to earth in person. All of them. We saw Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, except for Bernie. Bernie's not particularly warm and fuzzy and, you know, pass by and shakes your hand like, okay, hello, you know, and I'm ready to move on and do something else. He's driven. He is driven.
Type A people, I'm told, respond better after they've had a heart attack. And Bernie's classic example. But he's 79, or he will be in September, and he's had a heart attack. And at that age, most people are thinking about other things in life other than running the world. But Bernie he's relishing this. You can tell he loves the attention.
He does. He loves the fight. He's been fighting his entire life. He loves the fight more than any of them, and I think it's showing in the polls. He is committed to this.
Well, yesterday we lost another Gray. Not Ronna Gray, but Henry Gray, 95. Actually, he died 2 days ago, but John Word has a very fine story about Henry Gray's remarkable life and today's advocate, and he lived 95 years, January 19, 1925 to February 17, 2020, a blues player born in Kenner, but misspent many of his years here in Baton Rouge. And for those of us, we remember him holding court at the Piccadilly on Westmoreland, which unfortunately closed on June 29, 2014. Laura Cassidy is doing some fine work with the Key Academy there, but when I drive by there, it makes me sick that I don't see the old Piccadilly with Henry Gray. And there are those who would stop by and not only go to Piccadilly to hear Henry and see him, but those who actually taped a playing or two of this fine man at the piano. Here's how he sounded just as the Piccadilly was closing 5.5 years ago.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
That's Henry Gray at the Piccadilly at Westmoreland on Government Street. 1943, he joined the U.S. Army in World War II, sent to the South Pacific. He would frequently entertain other soldiers playing the piano and singing, and he came back home, and of course, his music is legendary, and for good reason. So we will remember the great Henry Gray with great reverence, and we'll hopefully touch base again soon with Ronna Gray, headed to Nevada.
Thank you. What an experience to hear him at Piccadilly.
And, of course, Ronna, as we know, is an accomplished author. And we will probably next time around talk about that with her and more.
Thank you, Jim.
Raymond Jetson is on deck, former state rep, former pastor. He's back after this pause for the news.